across this big, brown, flat, mysterious, crazy country, Powerade Tidal Burst presents Martin Malloy with Mick Malloy and Tony Martin.
And today, Mick goes in for a closer look at the John Howard Princess Di snubbing. I'll be giving this new dance craze the Macarena a go. We'll visit Australia's most annoying news agents, and with the news that senior citizens are suddenly in with the world's leading fashion gurus, we'll be asking you to dob in an oldie on Radio Gladiators. We'll kick off the final of True Confessions, and joining us live, it's Olympic swimmer Nicole Stevenson. Yes, it's all coming up on the program, where we've just been talking about the PM's decision not to attend that charity ball with Princess Di because he doesn't want to insult the Queen. Quite right, Johnny. That's our job here at Martin Malloy. So that's those Womacks. Good afternoon, Australia. Welcome to another week of Martin Malloy, right around the big brown land with myself, Tony Martin, and this bloke over here, a man who over the weekend fell into the gorilla enclosure at the zoo, and in a remarkable instinctive act of compassion which stunned onlookers, a giant female gorilla immediately raced over to him and relit his Winnie Blue, Mick Malloy,
and picked a few bugs out of my hair at the same time.
It was fantastic, and all the animals acting as one. I'd never seen a giraffe botting a ciggy over the tall wall before, but it was fantastic. We'll talk about that more later.
Sure.
What's going on in Canberra? I know there's riots. There's chaos on the streets of Canberra today, but any issues we should be focusing on?
Forget that one, Tone. The big news over the weekend came when Prime Minister John Howard refused to attend a charity ball with Princess Diana as guest of honour for fear it could insult the Queen.
Oh, yes.
Sources on the weekend said Mr Howard withdrew his decision to attend the Victor Chang Cardiac Research Institute's charity ball in Sydney on October 31 after it was revealed Princess Diana would attend. Apparently Howard told the gang down the Victor Chang Institute that he didn't feel it would be appropriate for him to be at a function with Diana, and that he didn't want to offend Her Majesty by being seen to condone the visit to Australia of her estranged daughter-in-law.
Right.
And Tone, that's exactly the same reason why I won't be attending this lavish charity bash. Because
really?
The last thing I want to do is insult the Queen. It's a matter of protocol, Tone, and if you know one thing about me, it's that I'm a stickler for protocol.
That's why
when Di's in Australia, I'll be going out of my way to make sure I don't turn up anywhere she's likely to appear. For example, on the night she's in town for the charity bash, I'll be spending the entire evening at a topless girly bar on the receiving end of a five-hour lap dance just so I don't run the risk of crossing paths with Princess Diana and thus insult the Queen.
Oh, you don't want to insult the Queen?
That's how committed I am, T. Martin, so I don't want to hear the Queen saying I never do anything for her. In fact, I've gone to some extraordinary lengths. I've gone to the extraordinary length of organising an itinerary for myself the whole time Diana's in the country. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, take us through it, Vicky.
All right. Well, the day she gets here, I'll be pig shooting with my mates.
All right.
Then it's off to the greyhounds for a dabble, maybe some kickboxing, and if all goes well, maybe an afternoon at the cockfights, where I'm sure I'll probably run into John Howard, who'll be going to exactly the same lengths to avoid any embarrassment to the Queen. Yeah. It's not like I enjoy doing these things, Tone, but sacrifices have to be made.
It's your duty.
That's it. I don't really want to spend an entire Sunday down the pub with my mates drinking beer till I vomit, but else can I be certain of giving Di a wide berth? The day of the charity bash, Tone, do you know where I'll be?
Where?
In court, facing charges of indecent exposure. Now I ask you, is there anything else I can do? Is there anything else I can do to avoid the prospect of royal embarrassment?
You don't want to take any chances.
That's it, mate.
You're crossing the T's, you're dotting the I's.
I'm not mucking around with this. When Di's plane lands in Australia, do you know where I'll be?
Where?
Chopping the head off a goat at my own cult headquarters.
Will you?
Now I ask you, what are the chances of a naked Princess Di covered in pig's blood turning up to that little soiree?
Very slim.
There you go. There's a function our Prime Minister could surely attend with no danger of insult or slight to the Queen. Perhaps he'd care to join me afterwards for some genital piercing. He can ask the Queen, ring her up and say, what would you prefer? I attended charity bash with Princess Diana or a body piercing clinic for a Prince Albert? Your decision. What would you most prefer, ma'am? I await your ruling with keen interest. Now, I know what you're going to say, Tone. The same thing all my critics keep saying. The same thing they trot out every time.
I had this organised well before I knew Princess Diana was coming. Okay, maybe I did, but shouldn't I therefore be applauded? I mean, if 3 months ago John Howard had organised to spend the night of October 1st in a spa bath full of yoghurt with several of the big top beauties, this whole unfortunate charity debacle would never have even been an issue. He's only got himself to blame. And if he's keen on avoiding any further embarrassment to Her Majesty, I suggest he start planning ahead and join me and some friends every weekend from now till Christmas for a bit of good old-fashioned wife-swapping and the odd bit of train surfing. Come on, buddy. It's the Queen and country.
That's new from John Mellencamp here at Martin Molloy. It's I Saw You First. And, Mick, what about those extraordinary scenes in Canberra?
What's going on?
Have you seen the footage on the news? Check it out tonight, people. Thousands of protesters storming Parliament House. Mm. Just beardos, going over the top of each other, kicking, punching.
Any good reason?
Well, tell you what, it should give you an idea of just how popular Peter Costello is. You know, people just can't get enough of him.
Is that it?
They want to get closer to him. They want to touch him several times about the face and body. He's only been treasurer for 3 or 4 months, and already, just look at the silver chair-style mania he's arousing in Canberra. Now, of course, the papers are saying those protesters were rioting. Mm. They weren't rioting. You know what they were doing, Mickey? Mm. The Macarena.
Were they?
They were doing the Macarena. It's the dance craze that's sweeping the world. Everybody's doing the Macarena, mm-hmm. I'm reading. And, in fact, I can feel a Macarena coming on right now. I don't even know what it is, and I'm doing it. Yes. I hope that's not going to happen too often during the show. I'd hate for the Macarena to wear out its welcome. Now, every 4 or 5 years, some sort of dance craze sweeps the world. Last time it was the Lambada.
Yep.
Remember the Lambada? There were whole movies about the Lambada. The forbidden dance, very blue, very raunchy. I think it has actually been officially forbidden by the UN now. Right. I mean, have you seen anybody doing it lately?
Nope.
It's the forbidden dance. You're not allowed to do it. Now, before the Lambada, we had breakdancing, of course, the mashed potato, the hokey pokey, the twist, the birdie, the batusi, the dance of the flaming assholes, which one of our listeners was describing in unnecessary detail, as my mum would say on Friday's True Confessions. Sharpie dancing was fairly big when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and now the Macarena. Now, have you seen it? Have you actually seen someone doing the Macarena? It's big at sports. Mm. You'll see him doing it. I think that was actually the Macarena Boris Yeltsin was doing during his election campaign.
Everybody!
In fact, I think he may have invented the Macarena accidentally on that very occasion. And now people just can't get enough. Oh, the Macarena. You think I've said the word Macarena enough?
You're enjoying it.
But various versions of the Mac have been, number one right around the world. Molly's talking Macarena today in the TV week. One of our best-known pop stars is changing her name to Tina Macarena, I hear. Peter Costello, he'll be doing it himself tomorrow night before his budget to try and take the sting out of it.
Right.
Yes, Australia, I'm afraid it is bad news, but first, let's Macarena! Come on! You're having fun, aren't you? But why is it so popular, particularly at the sporting events? I saw a bit of it at the Olympics, actually. Well, because it requires absolutely no skill whatsoever.
Right.
That's right. There's no footwork involved. It's basically a lot of ass work and pointing. In fact, it's even simpler than that dance you invented. Remember the Macarena?
Oh, yeah.
How did that go again? You drink 6 bourbon and cokes, turn to the left and fall off your chair.
Yeah.
It was a very short instructional video, if I remember, the Macarena. But as for the Macarena, it's just palms out in front, flip them over, grab the inside of your elbow, hand behind the neck, hands on hips, shake the buttocks, clap and turn to the left. Which is exactly what my doctor said to me when I went in for my last checkup. But it's designed to make you feel good. So I tell you what, attention people driving home in bad traffic. Let's get a giant national on-road Macarena going right now. Everybody stuck in a jam. Let's go. Fire it up, Gracie. Come on. Everybody, palms, elbows, neck, hips, shake those buttocks. Honk that horn. Come on. Flash those lights. Get those wipers going. Aerials up, aerials down. Flip the boot open and turn to the left. Oh, gee, that's enough. That's enough, Gracie. I'm completely mackered. Ready? Closer to free. That's the Bodines here at Martin Malloy, and we're all Macarena'd out. I'll tell you about the Macarena, Mickey.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit of an ordinary dance when boot skirting people start looking down their nose at it. That's the indication, I reckon.
Take umbrage.
But let's put that behind us, because right now, with a special report, it's over to Martin Malloy's Tony Martin.
Thanks, Tony. I'm here at Gillespie's news agency.
Hang on.
Did you lose those sound effects? What was that all about?
Sorry, are you talking to...
Yeah, of course I'm talking to you. What was that now it's over to Mark Malloy's Tony Martin? What are you doing?
Well, it was just a joke. I just thought I'd throw to Tony Martin. And that's
supposed to be funny, is it? That's your idea of a joke.
Look, how can we be having this conversation? Your bit was recorded 2 weeks ago.
Was it?
Yes. Oh, okay.
I'm here at Gillespie's, a small suburban newsagent in central Hunting, where a celebration is in progress. It was here that locals Peg and Bruce Tilbury purchased the Powerball ticket that last night bagged them a $3.5 million windfall. With me is the manager of Gillespie's, Pilko Prentice. Pilko, you're celebrating?
Oh, we certainly are. We're just going completely mad.
And what does that involve exactly?
Well, first we closed the store, then my wife and I just run round the shop mixing up all the magazines, picking some of them up and just shaking them till all the little subscription cards fall out of the floor. Then we get all the greeting cards and just put them all back in completely the wrong places. Then, when we're totally worn out, we'll race over to that little stuck-on notepad people can use to try out texters before they buy them, and then we'll just spend half an hour scribbling all over it with pens we've got absolutely no intention of paying for. It's just complete anarchy.
Wow.
And sometimes, when we've finished, we won't even bother putting the lids back on them. We just go completely mad.
Oh, hang on a sec, will you? Hello, Gillespie's?
You're joking. Bloody hell.
Hey, everybody. Old Mrs. Nugent from number 47 just cracked open that scratchy ticket she bought here last Thursday.
And she's won $5.
Jesus, quick, put the clothes sign up.
But this isn't
the first time good fortune has visited Gillespie's. In the last 3 years alone, they've sold 39 winning Oz Lotto tickets, over 300 successful scratchies, 78 raffle tickets that hit the jackpot, a legal pad used by Peter Carey to write his prize-winning novel Oscar and Lucinda, a ball of string for medal-winning Burmese short hair Mitzi, and a sellotape dispenser used to hit local man Sean McCackey in the testicles for the winning entry on last year's final of Australia's Funniest Home Video Show.
Hello? Really?
Listen to this, everybody. Kieran Perkins has just won the 1500 metres in Atlanta.
And what? Just before the race, he was seen signing an autograph with a felt pen bought in Gillespie's in Hunting. Fantastic!
Well, as the celebrations move well into their second year, it's back to me in the studio.
Hey, what's the difference between...
It's John Farnham, The Simple Life here at Martin Malloy. Nicole Stevenson's getting ready to join us, Mickey.
Good.
She's in the togs. She'll be here with the medals. Mm-hmm. In the next hour, we'll also have True Confessions entering its final week. We'll also have Radio Gladiators coming up. And you were talking about the Princess Di snubbing earlier on. Just quickly, there's a fair bit of controversy at Buckingham Palace at the moment because four members of the paparazzi have been put on the hit list, on the blacklist, the Queen's blacklist. She doesn't want to see them anywhere near Buckingham Palace because they're frightening the children.
Is that
apparently. That's what they're saying. Mm. They're saying because it's, Prince William doesn't want to go home after school. I'll probably have a look within the walls rather than who's lurking out the front. Yeah, but apparently the real reason is prospects of a photo of Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles on the smooch have encouraged a horde of photographers to descend on Balmoral, at least. Mm. Now, that's attracting people, is it? Oh, that'd get me immigrating
absolutely
myself. Oh, there.
Give me a visa.
And no mention at this stage of the Princess Di stalker who we were talking about Friday. He just lurks around wherever Princess Di goes, wearing, what was it again? A pair of shorts and carrying a silver attaché case. Yeah. Keeping our eyes open for him, and I'm certainly hoping that's the outfit Peter Costello will be donning for his budget announcement tomorrow.
Don't put it past him.
But speaking of fashion, what is going on in the world of fashion, Mickey?
Well, it's official, Tone. The news from European fashion circles is Aldi's are in.
Yeah?
From the Paris catwalks to high fashion magazines, everyone's wheeling out the Aldis to sell their clobber.
Right.
Italian designer Gianni Versace uses an old woman to show off his autumn collection. Levi's is running a highly acclaimed campaign using wrinkled models aged between 60 and 86. Ultra-trendy New York designer Itzhak Mizrahi is using an 82-year-old grandmother and so on. Basically, unless you've had a hip operation, you're just not hip. Is that what we want to see, Tone? I mean, I live next door to a couple of old blokes, and the only thing I've ever seen them model with any regularity is a whopping pair of gnarled bog catchers, which is fine around the house, but I'm not sure that's what I want to see on Calvin Klein's new billboard. You know, unless our old buddy Christo, the bloke who wrapped the European Houses of Parliament in cloth, is thinking of getting into the underdips market, I think they're out of a gig. Have you been following the work of supermodel Arthur Tunstall, Tone?
No.
Ah, there's your next Sheraton Sheets, man. The senile look is in. How long before Kevin Costner gives Elle McPherson the arse for Ruth Cracknell? And as for Angela Lansbury, well, any day now, she'll be a partner in that fashion cafe. How are the oldies going to go on the catwalk? That three-point turn down the end is going to be pretty hard to negotiate with a walking frame, isn't it? And I dare say there'll be a few requests from the models to turn the music down. No need for that awful racket.
Yes.
It's a din. Young girls will be approaching cosmetic surgeons with pictures of Lizzie Birdsworth going, make me look like that. The current crop of supermodels, Tone, are feeling the heat. At a fashion show in Milan last week, Cindy Crawford and Claudia Schiffer spent 4 hours in the bath getting the wrinkled look before they'd take to the catwalk. And have you seen the new face of Estee Lauder?
No, who is it?
Well, I don't know who she is, but I'm pretty sure she was in Cocoon.
This is Martin Malloy, brought to you by Powerade Tidal Burst.
The new SAFM, taking better music and more of it to the max.
Martin Malloy, where it's time to kick off another week of this.
Radio Gladiators, your chance to represent your state and win fame, glory and fabulous prizes. Here's today's challenge.
You'd think after 2 years he'd get sick of saying that,
no,
but
it
never loses its freshness. Mm. Now, you were getting stuck into the old people.
No, I wasn't. I think you'll find I was on their side, Tone.
But what I'm leading to here is you were talking about the old people and how, well, basically they're in fashion.
Mm.
I was watching Midday the other day and there was Jean-Paul Gaultier in sunglasses in the audience. He wasn't watching the show. He was scanning the audience for his next face of 96, face of 97.
Looking for ideas.
So I thought this would be as good an excuse as any to talk about the senior citizens on the segment. We want you to call us up and tell us unusual things that the older people say. Now, we're not just getting stuck into them.
Oh, no.
Because we've done this to everybody, really. We've talked about things that your mum says, things that your dad says, things that the young folks say.
Yep.
We've done things that your dog say.
Mm-hmm.
We've done stupid things that we say. That's just an ongoing segment, 2 hours every afternoon. And we've never really talked about things that the senior citizens, that the older people, that the grandparents say. Just unusual little phrases that they might toss out from time to time. And I'll give you an example. My grandmother, who's no longer with us, was always dodgy when we'd be watching the telly when I was a kid and there was something violent on or something with a bit of tit action. You know, it was always awkward. The kids would be sitting there going, oh no, it's near the end of the professionals. Something blue's going to happen and we're all going to have to pretend that grandma isn't in the room. It's going to be embarrassing. It's going to be awkward. And the moment would come and there'd be a pause and then she'd say, why don't they bring back Dr. Finlay's casebook? What? No, I don't know what Dr. Finlay's casebook was. I've gleaned over the years that it's some kind of program with an old, lovable Scottish vet in tweed clothes, or vet or doctor or someone. Yeah. And obviously it was a nicer kind of program, but we'd always hear that.
Yeah.
The Sweeney would be on, and it'd be, why can't they bring back Dr. Finlay's casebook?
Well, I have one very similar to that, and it's usually when we're watching something all together on the telly, and if the grandma's about, she'll usually open up, and like just at the crucial bit that you've all been hanging for, where someone like, is there any women's tennis on? Women's tennis. Doesn't matter where you are, what time of day it is there any women's tennis on? And generally, Gran gets her way.
Yeah, I find it's always amusing, and I'm not meaning to have a go at them, but it is funny when you hear your older person on an answering machine message. Because they always talk to the machine like it's a person. My grandma used to say things like this. Oh, could you tell Tony I'll be sending those two jars of marmalade in the afternoon post? It was as though the answering machine was a bloke. He was kind of my butler. And so she'd always address the machine and not me.
That's a beauty. Here's another one. Here's another one that that'll come out. Sometimes around the dinner table, sometimes at family functions, just out of the blue. You hear someone like, whatever happened to that lovely Mike Walsh? I swear that's the truth. No good reason.
That lovely young Mike Walsh. We used at the dinner table... if anyone used an unsavoury term or phrase, you'd get this from my grandma. Oh, there's no need to bring that kind of language to the table. She didn't mind it if it was over on the couch, if it was out in the yard, or if it was down the pub, but there was no need to bring it to the table. We used to just sit around, kids, we'd all sit around the table just speaking French, hoping that she'd go, there's no need to bring that kind of language to the table, but it never happened, unfortunately.
We're at the dinner table, Tone, one of my favourites, and it was usually, you know, after you'd finished eating and you'd say to you, you know, the grandma, well, would you like some more? Have you had enough? And she'd always say, I'm full to pussy's bow.
Really?
Now, I don't know what it means. If anyone can explain it to me, go ahead. I'm full to pussy's bow.
If anyone knows what pussy's bow or Dr. Finlay's casebook is, we'd appreciate a fax. And here's just the last one. My granddad, who was out of the picture before I was born, but apparently he'd be watching television and seeing some of the outrageous fashions that were being displayed by the young people. This is like in the 50s. And he'd apparently go, oh, you know what? Oh, I don't like this. You know what? You can't go wrong with a kilt. I think he might have been slightly Scottish. And it didn't matter what the occasion, he'd have the kilt on. You can't go wrong with a kilt. There's some advice for the young people today.
There's something for next year's Fashion Week.
All right.
An old bloke in a kilt. Well, it's all the rage.
He's probably already been signed up by Itzhak Mizrahi. But we are looking for little quirky phrases that the older people come out with. Do we have a prize? Gracie? Nicely done. Well, we've got a pair of cool Bolle Sunnies that'll look tops on your gran or your granddad. You'll also go into the draw. You know what? If my nan was listening to this, she'd be going, at last you're playing some real music on your program. You'll go into the draw for yet another trip for two to Falls Creek, this time courtesy Falls Creek, courtesy Qantas, courtesy Winterhaven Ski Hire, and you'll be staying 5 nights at the Nelson Lodge. That's the Nels. I think somebody got a bit pissed before they finished painting the sign there, but it's just the Nels. And call us now. You'll get the Sunnies no matter whatever happens. 1-800-657-657.
You're not forgotten.
That's the cause. I'm sure it's called Forgiven, Not Forgotten here at Martin Malloy. It's Radio Gladiators. And today, because we've done just about everybody else, it's time to ask for quirky, strange, unusual things that the older person says, the more elderly members of our community. It's a bit of a disrespectful segment, I think, today.
Ah, well.
But let's forge on with it anyway. Who have we got on the line? Mickey.
It's Tim. How are you, Tim?
Not too bad, yourself?
Yeah, can't complain. What you got for us?
Okay, what used to happen when, you know, kids running around, having a bit of a punch-up and stuff, my grandmother used to go, stop it! It all starts with fun and games, and then somebody loses an eye.
Oh, yes. Yes, we've all heard that one, I think. I'll tell you who used to say that. Sammy Davis Sr. used to say that a fair bit, and he ended up having the last laugh.
Yeah, the old I told you so.
That's right. And both eyes still in place, Tim?
Yeah, at the moment, yeah.
Good on you. So not too much fun and games for you.
No.
Slowly with those scissors. All right, thanks, Tim. Who have we got next, Mickey?
It's Karen. Hello, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. Okay, what did your grandfolk used to say that you remember so fondly?
Well, my old Scottish grandmother, she attributes the increase in the divorce rate everywhere to increased chocolate consumption.
Oh, and what kind of research does she have to back up this theory?
I don't know, but she thinks this new chocolate body paint's not such a good idea.
She's just been looking at photographs of Elizabeth Taylor, and she's put two and two together, I think, with that one.
Could be.
And so what happens, obviously, around Easter time? It's a bit of a cue. Is she just saying, is this based on personal experience? Is she just trying to get you to stop eating the chocolates, Karen?
Well, that's a good question, actually.
I see. Does she listen to Martin Malloy?
Yeah, she does, actually.
Oh, really? Well, hello
to...
She
could well be listening now.
I think she's the one that always rings up and complains, Tone.
Yes. I think we've had a few calls from her, Karen. Thanks very much. Now we'll talk to Lisa. Lisa, what have you got for us?
My grandma, she always says, don't forget your brolly.
Oh, right. Just, what, every 5 minutes? Or when
when you're walking out the door, it's like a beautiful, bright, sunny day. It's not going to rain for the next week or so, and she'll say, don't forget your brolly.
Well, it could turn, Lisa. It could turn at any moment.
Well, you never know.
And you used to make sure you never left the house without a brolly while she was around?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. You'd get one stuck up behind.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and she'd say, make sure you take it, make sure you take it.
Well, that's fairly keen. Enforcing of the rule there.
Lisa used to be chased out her front door by her brolly toting grandma.
I'm just seeing Lisa's grandma watching Batman, and there's the penguin.
Don't forget your brolly, Mr. Penguin!
All right, enough brolly talk. Thanks, Lisa. And I think we've got a slightly similar piece of advice now from Heidi. Are you there, Heidi?
Yes, certainly am.
Your grandmother used to say something?
Yeah, when we were sort of saying goodbye and about to go, she'd say, and don't forget to take an egg for the road. But she wouldn't actually give us any eggs, even though they're on a farm.
Don't forget to take an egg for the road.
An egg, yeah.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, we don't know, because when we used to ask her, why do you say that? She just says, I don't know, my grandmother used to always say it. So, like, my great-great-grandmother.
I know. When I was a kid, we used to often go out taking eggs with us, but that was to hurl at the neighbours. And it wasn't something that Grandma condoned.
She never went that far.
And usually when we were doing that, the neighbours were saying, don't forget to take a brolly when you leave the house. It was that kind of arrangement. All right, so you're not really sure what that means. Was she mad, Heidi?
No, I don't think that. Well, she did have... Actually, I think it runs in the family, because we've got a whole vocab that... of little sayings like meet yourself coming back or heads on like mice to describe traffic, which I've sort of grown up hearing and thought was just natural Australian colloquialism.
Yes.
And I just come out with them in the part of conversation and everyone just looks at me as if I'm from Mars.
But taking the egg, I know when I see the Black Thunders leaving the station tomorrow morning, I'll be making sure they've got their eggs with them. Sensible advice. Thanks, Heidi. Now we've got Alison. Alison, you've got a phrase for us?
Yes. When I was 20 years old, I told the old lady next door to me, who would have been in her early 80s, I think, that I had accidentally gotten myself pregnant.
Right.
Well, it wasn't, you know, just me, but...
Yes, someone else was... There was a second party,
yes,
right?
Yes, there was, there was. And she, after giving me condolences, an old dear, oh dear, said to me, well, why weren't you using the pill or condoms if you're screwing around?
Oh, yes.
That old chestnut. We're always getting that from the grannies, aren't we?
Yes. I don't know how many times I've been told that by my gran.
Oh, yes, gran. Of course, gran.
You haven't told me yesterday. You haven't been screwing around, have you, again, Tony? Grandma, don't bring that kind of language to the table. That's what I always say. Thanks very much, Alison, and sensible advice, too, by the way, from the next door neighbour. Have we got time for one more, Mick?
Yeah, let's see if Dylan's on the line.
Yeah, I'm here.
How are you, Dylan?
All right.
What you got for us?
Well, we were all sitting around last Christmas watching an old Rock Hudson movie.
Rock Hudson, yes.
Rock Hudson, yeah. And my grandma pipes up and says, he must have done this before he died.
Is that our winner? I think it is.
And did you manage to reply with a straight face at all, Dylan?
No, we were all rolling around on the floor cacking ourselves.
All right, well, the next time you roll around on the floor cacking yourself, you'll be doing it in a pair of Bolle sunnies, Dylan. And you could be off to Falls Creek. You're gone into the draw for that trip. It's coming out of the barrel this Friday, so be listening this time Friday.
Definitely will.
And thanks for that. And guess what? We'll be speaking to somebody who's a long way off being someone who produces these kind of phrases in the next hour. She's getting the togs on, and she'll be joining us live on the show, Olympic medalist Nicole Stevenson.
This is Martin Malloy.
Get them straight to interrogation.
Brought to you by Powerade Tidal Burst. It's on the street.
And in this hour of Martin Malloy, we'll boot off the final week of True Confessions. Pete Smith has good news for those having trouble getting themselves out of bed in the morning. And next up, we're talking to Nicole Stevenson, all thanks to Powerade Tidal Burst. That's Collective Soul with World I Know. And Mickey, let's hang a bit of green and gold up, shall we?
Let's do it.
We don't do it that often in the studio, but our guest today, she's one of our finest swimmers with a sack of gold, silver and bronze medals from the Commonwealth Games and a bronze and silver from those Olympics in Atlanta. When were they? Is it just recently,
some
I think?
Time ago.
You'd think there'd been something about it on the telly. I would have thought. But anyway, she's waited the requisite 1 hour since her last meal, and she's ready to talk. It's Nicole Stevenson. Nicole, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Congratulations. It must be great to have it all in the rear vision mirror now. Are you relaxed?
Yeah, a little bit tired, but certainly relaxed.
We've seen you in these parades around the country. We've seen you at the big dinner with the Prime Minister. Did you get to meet John Howard?
Actually, he was sitting right behind me, and we got our checks for our gold medal and silver medal and bronze medal incentives, and I was just going to give him a bit of a nudge and say, hey, Johnny, is it going to be tax-free? But I didn't think it would go down very well.
Now, let's just talk about those checks. We've been making a few jokes about them on the show. What was the feeling like in Atlanta when more and more people were winning and the amounts of money was going down? I mean, I don't want to say that that's what it's all about, but there must have been some concern.
Oh, very much so. Ask Russell Marks, the shooter. Just ask him. He says, blame the bloody hockey girls.
No, that's it. You only get one gold medal on the medal tally,
but
don't
then
you?
There's 15 girls that played in the hockey team and they all deserve the same amount. But then there's the softball team that got bronze, the women's basketball team that got bronze, men's hockey team that got bronze.
So thoughtless.
Yeah, so.
Is it true that you were all lined up when Steve Monaghetti was running in the marathon, just pelting him with eggs, trying to slow him down?
No, it was a bit early. I think I was getting my 1 hour sleep.
Okay. Now, you would have been partying at that stage because all the swimming was over in the first week, and by that second week, I imagine you would have had one eye on the Olympics and the other eye on the nightlife.
Yeah, the swimmers, I guess, are a bit famous for going out in the second half of the Olympic Games, and if you speak to Steve Monaghetti, he just walks past you and says, bloody swimmers. We're the ones making all the noise in the Village Quadrangle, keeping him awake at night. But no, I was very much asleep when Steve was competing.
And is that a problem in the Village? Because it's a high-density living, really, for lots of athletes. Is there lots going on?
15,000 athletes in the one area, and we had things like, we've got there was a stadium there, and they had Hootie and the Blowfish come and play. They had Red Hot Chili Peppers come in and play for us, and not a very big crowd for them, only 15,000.
No wonder the Modders was complaining about the noise. Hey, Hootie, shut up! Run in the mine!
Damn Blowfish!
But it's good morale, for the team to go out once everyone stops competing. But basketball girls were the same. They didn't finish till the very last night. They felt a bit ripped off as well.
And what is there to do in Atlanta when you're not swimming in a pool? What kind of
dodge bombs?
Dodging bombs, obviously.
That became almost one of those honorary sports, wasn't it?
Very much so. You'd walk along the streets and all of a sudden all the police cars would pull up and just shut the street off. Sure. They had something like close to 200 bomb threats.
And were you under house arrest at one stage? Were you not allowed out of the Village?
For about a day we were under house arrest, but the AT&T Global Village that actually had the bomb go off, we were there 35 minutes before, but someone, keep in mind the swimmers were on a dry trip, but someone actually yelled out, beer's finished, let's go, and that's why we left.
You were saved by brew.
Exactly, yeah.
And you say 200 bomb threats.
Yeah.
Is that true?
And they had to go and investigate every single one of them, and in the end they were detonating, you know, the McDonald's bag on the side of the street that they thought looked suspicious. So, I mean, they had to check everything.
And what did you make of Atlanta as a venue for the Olympics? Was it a good one, or was it just was it way too hot and just wrong?
Well, being a Melbourne person myself and knowing that Melbourne went up against Atlanta.
Yes.
And knowing that the reason Atlanta got it was because a cold beverage company that's based in Atlanta, I think Melbourne would have been a better venue, but now Sydney's got it, and I know the next Olympic Games are just going to be so much better. It wasn't run very well. You had 40 in the Village, and you can imagine Americans are all really power-hungry and gung-ho.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they were all arguing with each other about, you know, who's going to have power, so it was a bit fickle in there.
And you mentioned that the Sydney Games in 2000, you've been playing a strategic role in getting a hold of them, haven't you, yourself?
Yeah, I was part of the bidding process as to who I was in Melbourne, but that didn't really work. Yeah, so I mean, I had to go out and make appearances on behalf of Sydney 2000, myself and Damien Keogh, so I feel proud that I was part of that.
Right, and is there much sucking up to one Antonio Samaranchin? Is it true that he just sits back on a big chaise lounge and people just bring him chocolates?
Is it true that he was the one that did the stain on the flag? That lipstick mark, what was it doing there?
What do you know about that?
I just have this vision of the flag being draped around Juan Antonio with not very much clothing, jumping off the top of the wardrobe onto a bed. No, I don't know very much about it at all, to tell you the truth.
Is that an Olympic sport?
It could be. Bed hopping.
All right. Well, that's making me feel a bit ill, that image. So we might just go to a song if that's all right. Can you stick around for another break, Nicole?
Certainly.
Cat. Martin
Malloy. And Nicole Stevenson's still with us. She's on the party circuit at the moment. she's back from Atlanta. And how have the family taken to your efforts over there? Have you got any advice? Have people been saying you should have done this, you should have done that?
No, it's really funny because when we were in over swimming at Atlanta and we got all the negative publicity and we were getting the Australian coverage of Channel 7, the newspapers were being sent over a couple of days late, but we were seeing it all, you know, swimmers sink and stupid headlines like that. But now to come back and have the ticker tape parades and see the public out there and know that they think we did a great job. They support us wholeheartedly and, you know, to know that it's pretty special.
Why do you reckon the papers do that? They're pretty quick. you know, someone didn't win a race or didn't perform well in a race they were supposed to, and they were onto it. They were just pushing it all the way.
I mean, I guess we weren't winning that many medals at the start of the competition. That's the way it always folds out for the swimmers.
Well, how do you feel then now you've got the head of the actual... Look out! Hang on.
There's an infant running loose in the studio. Nicole, if you could just explain what's happening here.
My niece has got her Heinz juice bottle in her mouth and she's headbutting the glass partition.
We'll get back to her in just a minute. But how does it make you feel to hear, I think, Paul Coates, the head of the Australian Olympic team or commissioner or whatever, come out and say he wants 60 medals for Sydney. He wants 20 of them to be gold. And if you don't do that, you're not repaying what, you know, the public's putting in. That's the pressure from the start, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. John Coates, the head of the Olympic committee, he's come out and said that he wants 20 gold medals. Yay, and Alex thinks that's right.
That's a future Olympian right there. And so what happens, what's going to happen is, hey!
She's going to eat the microphone.
We won't play any more Phil Collins. Don't worry.
No, I think there's too much emphasis being placed on medals, and I really do think that's a silly thing to do. But, you know, they've obviously got to have objectives, and they've got to make sure that they reach those objectives. And hey,
when you don't
reach sponsors.
But when you don't reach those objectives, then the headlines will come out and call you
Sydney Olympics failure. Yeah. So, you know, it's good to get sponsorship, I guess, for the Sydney 2000 committee. If they're saying we're going to win 20 gold medals.
What about, we've got to mention a couple of names here. Laurie Lawrence and Don Talbot. What can you tell us about them? What are they like off the leash in Atlanta?
Well, Don Talbot actually left the very next morning. He doesn't like to see what goes on. He doesn't drink alcohol, doesn't go out at all. So he left the very next morning. Laurie Lawrence was leading the charge of going through the security systems to get into the sporting events. So he was charging everyone through.
It was amazing. In that second week, it didn't matter where they go. If they crossed to an equestrian event or to the hockey
Hang on. The gold medal events. Is that what you just said?
He was there. I get you.
Yeah, no, he likes being around champion athletes and especially those that are winning, so good guy.
Now, Nicole, another thing you've been involved in is the tele-commentaries for Channel 9. Is that something you're going to keep doing?
Well, I've just actually got a new job with Optus Vision and Channel 9 starting September 1, and I'm actually, here's a plug for you.
Okay.
The World Junior Athletics Championships start this Wednesday. She's now got my medals out, the clanging in the background. They start this Wednesday in Sydney, and biggest Australian team, 62 athletes. Should be very, very exciting. And so I start doing the trackside interviewing with that.
Have you got any...
Plug those medals off the kitty, would you? Want a look at those?
Here we go. Have a look at this. Actual Olympic medals in the studio.
Gracie's telling me, to bang them together?
Bang them together.
That's all right. They're not worth much, are they, Nicole? Have a look at that.
Now look at the bronze one. If you hold it in the right light, it actually looks gold.
So you're like Joan Collins nowadays, eh? You don't go anywhere unless the lighting's just right. That's fantastic. And I tell you what, you could put that around your neck and probably just bend over and push it into your parking meter. And you get free parking as well.
And Nicole, have you got the keys to the city? Did they hand out those when you were in Sydney? I think they were distributing them keys pretty...
I'm in a bit of a dilemma because I grew up in Melbourne. I've moved to Sydney, so I don't really know. They don't... know where I'm actually, where home is for me. So Melbourne, they sort of say, you've left us. In Sydney, they say, oh, you're just a Mexican up here. So I don't think I'm getting a key to any kind of city.
All right. Well, thanks for talking to us today. And Nicole, would you like to stick around for True Confessions?
Love to.
Okay, that'll be next. I'm Martin Malloy. And that's Amanda Marshall here at Martin Malloy, where it's time for Pete Smith to use these words.
Got something you want to get off your chest? Well, now's your chance, because it's time for Martin Malloy True Confessions. Maybe you've been burning off on the wrong day, Perhaps you've been involved in the shonky purchase of an impressionist masterpiece. Or maybe it's just that you like to strip off and dance suggestively to the Wiggles. Everybody has a guilty secret, but only Mick and Tony are giving you the chance to fess up and bag yourself a fabulous prize.
Well, it's my 21st, and the party went over a couple of days. Yeah. Anyway, we had a bit to drink, and they wanted to get pretty experimental, so they wanted to show me the Dance of the Flaming Arsehole.
Oh, yes, and I'm sure people who are not familiar with the Dance of the Flaming A's are confused at this point, but it does involve newspapers on fire. connecting with a part of the body not normally associated with reading material.
Three confessors enter the booth, but only one emerges with the George Michael 3.5 pack of CDs and goes into the drawer for a trip for two to the UK to see George Michael live in concert. All thanks to Foxtel's Red Music Television. Okay, lads, let them off the hook.
Yes, thanks very much, Pete Smith. And Olympian Nicole Stevenson has stuck around. She wants to confess to something. She's pretty keen to be involved in this segment. But just before we get to that, Nicole, you were telling us about your encounter with Little Richard. What was that like?
We ran out on the closing ceremony stage out in the ground about an hour earlier, and, you know, security went through the roof. But he's out there and he's sweating. And you guys were talking about Michael Jackson's plastic surgery. Oh, my God. It looked like his face was melting. And he had these lips, and he had black lip liner around the lips. And he just looked like he was just going to melt. He's going to be this big puddle on the stage.
There was an avalanche in the face department.
Yeah, the gravity was kicking in. It was down.
Well, but, it was pretty hot anyway, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, yes. At 10 o'clock at night, yes.
Let's just thank God that Michael Jackson wasn't there. But let's get that booth out, if we could, Gracie. Wheel it out. There it is, up to Olympic standards.
Oh, yeah.
Laurie Lawrence has given it the go-ahead, so if we can step inside, open up the slidey door.
You can drive the booth around town for your next ticker tape parade too, Nicole.
Now I'm scared, because it's not really the kind of Olympic confession that you should be making.
Oh, no, well, hit us with
it. And I have to tell you as well, my father still doesn't know about this, so he's about to hear.
Does he listen to Martin Malloy?
No, I think he's an AM guy.
You're okay. Safe. Okay.
1981.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Grade 6. Mm-hmm. I was a very easily led child.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Got caught smoking down the back oval.
Oh!
Oh, no!
Give me those medals. Give me those medals. I cannot believe it.
I was just trying it, and the teachers happened to walk past.
Nicole, what was your brand?
I can't remember.
It was a Winnie Blue, wasn't it?
I was scabbing off someone else.
It was a Winnie Blue. I'm sure it was a Winnie Blue.
Yeah, I had it up in my shirt.
Very nice. Yeah, I think we saw you during the closing ceremony just having a quick one round the back. Was that you?
I think so.
No, it wasn't me.
They make you get out of the pool these days. You know.
All right. Well, thanks for getting that out of your system, Nicole.
Okay, I feel much better now.
And do you have some kind of... I'm sure there's a ticker tape parade somewhere that you should be at right now.
No, they've actually finished now, but I'm sure I can find a party somewhere.
All right. Like, and the best of that commentating too on Optus Vision.
Thank you very much.
And now, listeners, it's your chance to do as Nicole has done and fess up to something. Give us a call. You know the number, 1-800-657-657. Mr. Bond, we're full up today. Call back tomorrow. Thanks very much. It's True Confessions, thanks to our friends at Foxtel's Red Music Television here at Martin Malloy. A very basic segment. It's just a booth. It's me and Mick on one side. It's you, the listener, on the other. Mm-hmm. Confessing up to something that's been making you lose sleep. Let's step into the booth, shall we, Mick? Mm-hmm. And if you could open the first slidey door and introduce our first
There
stage.
We go. I believe it's Bridget. Hi, Bridget. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
That's all right. Well, what can we do you for exactly?
Well, you see, this was last year for school. In well, we had to, at the end of the year for like a grade, we had to do this like group performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, they were all like coming over like the night before to learn the lines and that.
So oh, so it's a play?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what was the production? Just set the scene for us.
Oh, I don't know. It was really bad, like our teacher picked it for us.
Oh, yeah. Like William Shakespeare, something like that.
Like, you know, a mother and two daughters sort of having this conversation that was really bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, okay. We couldn't be bothered to learn the line, so we decided that during our performance we'd, like, pretend to be playing cards. So
right.
What we did is we cut out little pieces of paper and stuck wrote our lines out and stuck them on the cards.
Cue cards! All right. Well, I'm glad you've confessed up to that, Bridget. But, you know, Marlon Brando won an Academy Award for Best Actor for his performance in The Godfather. Mm. And word is that he had all his lines written on the faces of the people he was talking to in the scene. That's apparently true. He'd just have little notes, little post-it notes everywhere, even for, you know, I'll get that if the phone rang. He'd have it on the phone written down.
Apparently on set it looked like a game of celebrity head.
Everyone just had the little things on top of their heads. But it's all about whether you can get away with it, Bridget, and did you get away with it?
Well, you see, when we walked into the room, like, with the cards, the teacher goes, oh, yeah, any bet you got your lines written on the back of the cards? We went, oh, ha, ha, yeah, like, you know, laughed it off.
As if.
Yeah. And, see, the problem was, like, we had our cards sitting in, like, special piles and stuff, so we know when.
Oh, right. In order. So someone's gone the shuffle, have they?
Well, I don't know what happened.
Want to see a card trick? And then you're going, I'll get that. Quickly, the phone's ringing.
Well, I don't know what happened, but they all got mixed up and we said the lines at all the wrong time and it just stuffed up. So we just had to make up and it just didn't make sense.
Right, so it ended up being a bit of experimental theatre by mistake.
Yeah, and we got a really, really bad laugh too.
All right, well, thanks for confessing, Bridget. But let's move on to booth number two. And I believe it's Michelle. Are you there, Michelle?
I sure am. How are you guys?
Good. What are you confessing to?
Well, I'd like to confess. I'd like to own up to my mum and dad. When I was a teenager and I came home with that mark on my neck and told them I got it walking the dog, I ran into a low branch on a tree. It didn't really happen that way. We all know what it was.
Oh, a bit of a love board. But surely they weren't buying the low branch kind of story, were they?
Well, when you're a teenager, you think your parents are really stupid. Yeah. And it's not till you get a bit older and you realise that they were, you know, they really knew what was going on.
Bitten by a vampire. That was mine.
You won't believe this, Mum. Yeah, those sort of stories only work for the one. You can't go, I was hit by a series of low branches.
That old bruise has flared up again, Mum.
And if they're listening today, Michelle, what will they be doing? Will they be on the phone to you straight away after the segment to give you a serve?
Yeah, Mum will be on saying, I told you so.
Oh, well, she'll be saying, hey, look, a few low-flying twigs are about to hit you on the bottom.
All right. Well, thanks, Michelle, and let's see if Arthur behind door number three can go one better. Are you there, Arthur?
Yes, I am, boys. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I'm on a mobile.
Oh, well, the entire nation's listening at this point, Arthur, so get it off your chest.
Okay. Well, that happened a few years ago, Tony. Being of Greek origin, on the Good Friday, the Greek Easter, we all go to a mass, which is starts about 9 o'clock, and they come out with like a rosary, and they walk around the streets, and everyone walks around with the candles.
Oh, yep. Gotcha.
And we'd gone shopping. And I had this, I had Mum shopping in the boot of the car, and me and the mates got out, and we went over being, you know, good little Greek boys. We thought we'll go to the church and see what's happening. So, anyway, we seen this bloke standing up against the wall on the church, and had this nice brown suit. So one of the guys suggested, look, why don't we go back to the car and grab the eggs and let him have it? Anyway, we've gone back to the car, grabbed the eggs, lined him up, and just pelted him with the eggs from the crowd. Anyway, this bloke's gone berserk and he's running around trying to see who it was. Anyway, we've had a good laugh, gone home, and anyway, a couple of weeks later, my fiancé at the time said, look, we'll go around and see a couple of my uncles. I said, oh, that's right, no worries. We went round and we get to the house, he opens the door and there's her uncle.
Oh, still covered in yolk and albumin.
It was actually my father-in-law's brother.
Oh, what are the chances of that, Arthur?
Well, it's probably about a million to one. But see, I feel even worse now because by admitting it today, he'll never hear it because the poor fella passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh, hopefully not an egg-related death.
No, you shouldn't
be laughing, Arthur. That's our job.
Arthur, were you at the funeral?
Yes, I was.
Did you behave yourself?
I did.
You hadn't come from the Safeway?
Did have your mum shopping in the boot of the car, did you?
No. Actually, the only people that know about it are my wife and my brother-in-law. No one else has ever found out. So if anyone's listening tonight in the family, they know now.
Oh, well, you've gone the egg. And how did you feel when you just saw him standing in the door? You didn't try and come up with a bit of a story. You didn't admit to him at the time.
I just froze. Absolutely froze. And once in the conversation, he actually said to me, he says, there are a couple of mongrels have ever found out who they were. he never found out.
Oh, well, is that worth a prize?
Yeah, give him a prize.
I think it is. For hurling a number of eggs at an innocent bystander, you've got yourself a three-pack of CDs.
Oh, never leave home without your eggs. That was a bit of advice given to us earlier tonight.
That's right.
Thanks.
In Radio Gladiators.
Guys, I've been trying for months to get on one of your segments, and I'm so thrilled I got on tonight.
And you're not going to get off either, are you, Arthur?
No.
Well, you've got the three. Well, join the club. It's
thanks
a three-pack of CDs, and it's you've gone into the draw for the trip for two to the UK.
Oh, fantastic.
To see George Michael, and it's a fantastic show.
Take your eggs.
But yes, exactly. So take them along.
I will take the eggs.
You know,
the only thing I'm worried about is the wife might leave me. She loves him.
Oh, well, she can be hurling the underpants. You can be hurling the eggs and see what
no
happens
worries.
There. If you come out of the barrel this Friday, that prize is going off. So be listening then. Thanks for fessing up mm-hmm. about the eggs. And
good
I'm
idea,
sure
Arthur.
All the Rellos are in the picture now. Your phone will be ringing when you get off the line to us. And we'll be back with more True Confessions tomorrow. And hey, it doesn't matter if you've been hit by an egg, remember.
You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Richford here at Martin Malloy.
Hi, Pete Smith here. Are you having trouble getting out of bed in the morning? Got something on that you really just can't afford to miss? Then pick up the phone and book yourself a Pete Smith Wake Up Reminder Call.
Yes.
Hello?
Up and at 'em, you sleepyhead.
What?
Come on, haul ass, you dopey bastard.
What the?
It's that simple. I've recorded a number of Wake Up Reminder Calls that are perfect for any occasion.
Hello?
Wakey, wakey, hand off snakey.
Oh, God.
Here's one you're sure to love.
Hello?
Hi, Pete Smith here. This is your 11 o'clock wake-up call, so get out of bed, you bum, or you won't have time to fill out your dole diary before the start of the midday show.
Hey.
What's that? You're a particularly heavy sleeper, I hear you say. Not a problem. Here at the Beatsmith Wake Up Reminder Call headquarters, we've got a variety of tricks up our sleeve when it comes to getting no good layabouts like you out of bed.
Hello?
Fire! Fire!
What?
We're all gonna die!
What?
My skin is blistering! What? Forget me! Save yourself! Save yourself!
Jeez. And here's one that would have Rip Van Winkle dragging his lazy backside out of the boudoir.
Hello?
This is your 9 o'clock wake-up call. That's 9 o'clock. Only 10 hours till...
Oh, God. Okay, I'm up! I'm up already! Knock it off!
So go on, pick up the phone before you go to bed and book yourself a Pete Smith Wake Up Reminder Call. And we guarantee next time you pick it up, you'll be in for a rude awakening.
Hello?
Out of bed now, pussy.
What?
I can be there in 5 minutes to slap you around, Chester. So pull the finger out and get those buns in the shower pronto.
Leave me alone, Pete.
Hey, pal, if you put a trace on this call, you just might find that it's coming from inside your house.
I'm up. Leave me alone. I'm up. And exhale. Alanis Morissette, still learning as she goes here in Martin Malloy. That's all we've got time for. Thank you, Alanis Malloy. Now, just going through a few of the things we've missed. We're all getting very, very excited about Peter Costello's budget, aren't we? Especially as he has promised to precede the budget announcement with a quick performance of the Macarena. We're all looking forward to the Macarena Costello style tomorrow night. And there's a bit of Costello talk. You know there's a budget coming up when you see Peter Costello photographed in casual clothing.
Have a look at that. They've had a word to him, haven't they, Tide? They've said, get rid of the suit. This is a really tough budget. Get out there in a nice woolly V-neck.
That's right.
Look at that.
He's posing for some sort of Laura Ashley catalogue. He's in a park. He's looking like Mr. Friendly.
Got the fair hands in the pockets. He's going to be skipping pebbles in a minute.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Look at that. I think he's fashioned that jumper out of one of those blankets he's been handing out.
It's the cover of his new album, Peter Costello Reflections, coming soon.
It's the warm, fuzzy Peter Costello, people. Have a look.
A lot of controversy today in the Sydney papers, at least, about his refusal to move into the Treasurer's official mansion in Canberra.
Mm.
And there's a picture of it on the front of the Sydney Telegraph, and it says, "The Heritage Mansion that was unfit for a Treasurer." And I have to side with Peter Costello on this one. That's no mansion. It's a big house, sure. It's probably worth a lot of money. That's not a mansion. That's just a big old brick mental home. Have a look at that.
It looks like someone's walking past, you'd hear organ music coming out of the top window.
And it'd be Peter Costello.
Looks like the house in The Shining. You're getting there. If it starts snowing, people, you're in.
Let's pop around to Peter Costello's house for a bit of red rum at the Overlook Towers.
He just spends the whole night racing around on one of those green machines doing laps of the corridor.
No, I have to side with the treasurer on that one. The bloke who was built for, Lord Casey, he moved out after 8 months himself anyway. So, you know, there you go. And just speaking of, do we have time? Yes, I want to mention another story that I found in a Sydney paper, and I suppose this is really specifically only for people listening in Sydney, but Honda Civics are being stolen by the truckload. If you've got a Honda Civic, it's probably going to be pinched, according to the papers today. Street gangs are stealing them for initiation tests.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently there's a bit of a street gang, and you can't get into it until you've stolen a Honda Civic. That's part of it. And I think that was the same entrance test you needed to get into Bond University, wasn't it? I think it might have been. It was either a Honda Civic or a Neo Impressionist. It was something like that. But anyway, we've got to go. There's people queuing up to do other programs. Thanks to our guest Nicole Stevenson and all our gladiators and fesser-uppers. We'll be back tomorrow with Judith Lucy on assignment at the Edinburgh Festival. And until then...
Martin Malloy is a misguided production in association with Half-Baked Ideas and Ill-Conceived Concepts Proprietary Limited. Brought to you by Powerade Tidal Burst. Pete Smith speaking.